Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sports Rivals. I'm Gary Thorne. Our purpose here on Sports Rivals is an attempt to preserve some memories of classic sports rivalries through the words of those who participated in those events. Now, when you say Red Sox-Yankees, rivalry is probably your first thought, and there's a good reason for that. Over the years, these two teams have created some of sport's best moments with some of the game's most notable stars. Today, here on Sports Rivals, we are delighted to bring two of those stars to you, Lou Piniella and Fred Lynn. Now, Lou played for the Yankees from 1974 through 1984, part of a 16-year Major League career. Lou was the American League Rookie of the Year in 1969, and he won two World Championships with the Yankees in 1977 and 1978, and that is the year, 78, that we're going to be talking about a good deal today. Fred Lynn played for the Red Sox from 1974 through 1980. He, too, had a 16-year Major League career like Piniella. He, too, was Rookie of the Year. That was in 1975. And he also won the MVP award that year. He became the first Major League player to win both awards in the same year. Piniella, Lynn, they faced one another in what was a tumultuous 1978 season, in which Boston lost a 14-game lead in the American League East in just 7 weeks. In September, the Yankees came to Boston, and they swept a four-game series, with the Yankees moving into first place for the first time that season. That series has become known as the Boston Massacre. So you go to October 1, Boston beat Toronto, last game of the season, moving them into a tie with the Yankees for first, necessitating a one-game playoff. Move to the next day, October 2nd. The Yankees' Bucky Dent became a Yankee hero forever and a Red Sox curse for eternity when he hit a three-run homer in the playoff game that gave the Yankees a lead they did not surrender. And the Yankees would go on to win the World Series. Now, our producer, Jay Cutlow, and I have had the opportunity to talk with Fred and Lou about this, and now you're going to get the opportunity to listen in here on Sports Rivals. And I think probably the best way to begin this, Fred, let's turn to you. Let's take a look about the expectations, in particular for the Red Sox, going into that 1978 season.
Well, the 78 season, we were very much looking forward to it because after the 77 season, we'd only lost to the Yanks that year by two games. And the Baltimore Orioles and us were right on their tails at the end of the season. So we were looking forward to 78, and we thought we had a heck of a chance. We got up to a great start. Everybody in the lineup was hitting. The pitching staff was going great. No one was injured for the first half. This is Jimmy Rice's big year. He won the MVP that year, had over 400 total bases, and he was just tearing it up. And I was sitting in front of him, so I was getting pitches to hit. And Burleson and Remy were on all the time, so consequently, we were scoring a lot of runs. So the first half of the season, I don't know how many wins we had, but it was a significant amount, and we were playing flawlessly. The only problem that I could see that was happening at the time, even though we were winning, is that the lineup was the same every day. Zimmer would never change the lineup, nor would he take any guys out of the lineup. Even if we had a 7, 8, 9, 10 run lead, he kept everybody in there, which I knew sooner or later was going to bite us in the butt. And more of that later. But I'll let Lou talk about the first half of his season from the Yankees' perspective to see what he thought about it.
Well, for me, we felt good about our team also. We had won the World Series in 77, and we added Goose Gossage to our arsenal of pitching. So we felt really good about our chances. And lo and behold, we got off to a terrible start. And the main reason, we had so many injuries. Our team, we couldn't get our team on the field probably till about the All-Star break. And at the All-Star game, we finally started playing good baseball, got healthy, and we made a heck of a run the second half of the year. How we caught you guys, I'll never know, because at the All-Star game, we were 14 and a half out. And you guys had just a great team, a really a great team. In fact, My gosh, you have a couple Hall of Famers, and there should be a couple more off of your team, including you, Freddie. But anyway, we felt that if we didn't make a little ground up immediately after the ball game, I mean after the All-Star game, that we couldn't we wouldn't have enough time. At the same time, we had a new newspaper strike in New York, and the newspapers were out of commission. And that, you know, there was the Bronx Zoo and everything else going on at Yankee Stadium and in the New York area. So when the newspapers went out, they allowed us just to relax and play baseball. And at the same time, after the break, we went on a hot streak. Boston lost some games, and real quick, we were about 8.5 out. So we were back in the game. But listen, we played catch-up ball the whole second half of the year. Finally, in September, we went to Boston, 4 games out, and we swept the Red Sox in their ballpark. And then we opened up a few games, and we thought it was over. Lo and behold, Boston came back at us and tied us the last game of the year, and then we had that memorable playoff game in Fenway Park in October. And that's, Freddie, to me, that's the most fun game I've ever played. Probably more fun because we were on the winning side of things, but what a well-played game. And what a memorable game. That game stands out in my mind as the most fun game, pressure-packed game I've ever played in.
Yeah, before I get to the playoff game, I'll tell you what happened to our club in the second half. It's basically we flip-flopped with you guys. when I told you that all our guys were playing every inning, that got us. Burleson went down with an ankle sprain. That was a 3-week deal. And Frank Duffy, a very capable shortstop, didn't get any playing time. So when he came in there, man, you needed to spray him with WD-40. He was so rusty. You know, and he didn't perform well. And a couple other guys went down. Pitchings went down. And so all of a sudden, we're in just the flip-flop of the Yankees season. We're struggling to play .500 because of we don't have the right guys on the field.
Sure.
And yeah, finally, in September, we got guys back. But by that time, Bill Lee was in the doghouse with Zimmer, and he wouldn't pitch him the second half of the season. Bill Lee did not pitch against you guys in September. Remember, now we tied you, or you tied us, or however we ended up in a tie, 99 wins apiece. If Bill Lee pitches any game from like July on and we win one more game, then there is no playoff game. But he was in the doghouse. And so you guys come in for that key series in September, and we threw a kid named Bobby Sproul. I mean, I didn't even know who he was.
Well, let me tell you this. I'm going to intercept for a second because one of the questions that I was going to ask you, we played that 4-game series with you guys around Labor Day, and we won the first 3 games. And then the last day, you all had Louis Tion available, and you pitched Bobby Sproul. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, this kid must really, really be good because Zimmer wouldn't take that kind of chance of pitching Sproul on the 4th game. And boy, after I faced him the first time, you could see that he was really, really nervous, and I knew we were going to score a lot of runs that day, and we did. But boy, not pitching Tion was a big break for us.
Well, you know what? Zimmer would get these bees in his bonnet, and he wouldn't play guys or pitch. It was really the pitching staff. The pitching staff didn't get along with him very well, the veteran guys. You know, they knew how to pitch, and he was not a real aficionado of the mound, let's say. And so they had a lot of disagreements. And so he would just not pitch guys. And when he pitched Bobby Sproul, he couldn't throw it in the cage.
It
was awful. Yeah, he was so nervous. His eyes were like saucers. I'm going, oh, man, this could be a long day.
It turned out that way. It really did.
Yeah, so then you guys beat us. You sweep us. And then you take the lead, and we won, I think, 8 or 9 in a row to get to the playoffs. In fact, you guys lost to Rick Waits the last day of the season, little lefty from Cleveland.
No question.
And that you know, opened the door for us, but we played like gangbusters just to get to the playoffs.
That year there, we were the 2 best teams in baseball. Whoever won the American League East and went to postseason was going to win the World Series because the Yankees and Red Sox were the 2 best teams in baseball in 1978. You agree with that, Freddie?
I do. And we thought just like you guys, whoever wins this game, and it was a beautiful day in Boston.
Oh,
and
my God.
We're just thinking, well, whoever wins this game is going to win the World Series because there's no team that's even close to us.
No, not at all.
Hey, just going back one second when Lou talked about the, you know, the strike with the newspapers in New York at one point of the season. We're always curious as fans, how much does the media affect you guys? And, you know, you're talking about the four-game sweep, which was termed as the Boston Massacre. Freddie, how much does that get in your head, or does it not get in your head? And Lou, how much, you know, does the outside get into you guys? Because you guys are on the field, and we're always trying to think of what, you know, what's actually going on. Just if you want to talk to that at all.
Well, the media in New York wouldn't leave us alone. I mean, we that year there, we had Reggie on the team also, and Thurman and Reggie were going at it pretty good all summer. And every day there was just a different story in the newspapers, and it got really tiring. Everybody was just totally exhausted from reading the newspapers and listening to the media. And all of a sudden, they had this newspaper strike, and they allowed us to play baseball. We relaxed. We got healthy. And like I said, we made, I think we won like eight out of nine of the first games after the All-Star break. And Boston struggled immediately after the break, and we closed that gap to 8.5 games. And we were able to keep our momentum going and our confidence that we could catch Boston. But we knew it would be a real tough struggle because Boston had just a great team. They really did. The lineup they had, my God, it was as good as anything ever put together on a Major League Baseball field. They had a better lineup on the field offensively than we did. Where we equalized a little bit was we had a real nice bullpen with Sparky and Gossage and Dick Tidrow. And at the same time, Guidry that year was 25-3. My God, he was almost unbeatable.
Yeah, from the perspective on the Boston side, as far as the media is concerned, it's very similar to New York. We might not have quite as many papers. But, boy, if we started playing poorly, which we were in September, you couldn't get away from it. In the newsprint, but the talk shows. I mean, you couldn't even turn on the radio. There must be, I don't know how many talk shows there were, but they were just beating us down. Finally, you just couldn't read it. You couldn't read about it or listen to it. You just had to go put blinders on, live your life off the field, but you couldn't listen. You couldn't watch TV. You couldn't read the paper. You couldn't listen to the radio. You just went back to the stadium and then you felt comfortable with your teammates. Although we had some guys that were not quite Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson fighting, but we had some differences of opinion once in a while because we had a locker room full of type A personalities. So, you know, and when you start playing poorly, everybody starts saying, okay, you know, what are you doing? And you start pointing fingers. And then with the media thrown in there too, it's like a damn powder keg.
Well, with the tensions that were existing in the clubhouse, did you ever step in when the guys were going at each other, or did you just leave that thing alone?
Well, from my perspective, we just left it alone. I mean, listen, it was just going to play itself out. And the whole problem was Reggie basically, you know, he has a big ego, as everybody knows. But at the same time, this guy is a winning baseball player. And, you know, he likes the limelight. And at the same time, Billy Martin wouldn't hit him fourth in the lineup. And that made Reggie salt for a good portion of the time. And right around the All-Star break, we finally convinced Billy to let Reggie hit fourth if that's where he felt that he should hit. And he started hitting the ball much better for us. But let me tell you, there are no two tougher towns to play in newspaper and radio talk show wise in Boston and New York. I can tell you that.
Yeah, if you can play in either of those cities, we used to call it the big stage, you can play anywhere. Exactly. But on the flip side, you could get an all-star performer, say, in a small market club, come to New York or Boston and not be able to handle it. They just have never experienced anything like that, and they shrink like a shrinking violet. They can't perform. You know, fortunately for the Yankees and the Red Sox, we had a lot of guys that liked that stage. You got to have some type A personalities to handle it, and we both did. But I will say this about getting to the playoff game now, and everybody in Boston always think about how Bucky Dent beat us that day. And I talked to Lou many years ago. He was managing for the Seattle Mariners, and I was working at ESPN, and I did one of his games, and And as far as I was concerned, Lou Piniella won that game for the Yankees that day. First of all, he was playing right field instead of Reggie. Reggie didn't like the DH. He liked to play. But Lou's a much better...
He couldn't play right field. He couldn't play right field that day in Boston. That's a tough field to play with the sun. You know, they didn't have the double-deck stadium then. And that ball of sun was right over the top of that single deck. And I'm going to tell you what, it was a tough place to play. And you hit a ball off of Guidry in the middle part of the ball game that Zimmer told me when he coached for me in Tampa Bay that he thought that would be it would clear the bases. And I noticed that early in the ball game, Yastrzemski pulled a 3-2 fastball off of Guidry into the seats in right field. And I knew that Ronnie coming back on 3 days rest didn't have the fastball that he had earlier in the year, or if he would have pitched with his full complement of rest. And on that 3-2 pitch that you hit, Freddie, I moved over myself about maybe 10 or 12 or 15 feet towards the line, and you smoked one over to the gate right there in front of the bullpen, and the wind held that ball up a little bit, and I was able to make the play. But it was a heck of a ball game. How about Bucky Dent hitting a 3-run homer? He hit 3 home runs all year. Unbelievable.
Well, you know what? When Yaz hit the home run early, and I'm thinking, okay, I was like you, because I hit Guidry the other way, because you know he throws that nasty breaking ball. It's always away, and fastball's up and away. So I always try to hit him to left center. I didn't try to pull him. And we got a couple guys on. We're up 2-0, and I hooked a ball in the corner, and I'm thinking that's a minimum of double. It's going to be 4-0, 4-0, and we got Guidry out of the game, in which case, you know, we're into your middle relief, and that game's over. But you made that play, and what I tried to tell people, there's more to play in defense than just having talent. And what you were just saying to the people, how you thought, you know, your pitcher didn't quite have as normal stuff, and so you made an adjustment. Well, that's what really good players do. And when I heard you tell me that, I said, you know, I patted you on the head and said, that's a really good play. That's the kind of things that I think about when I look at my pitcher being from center field, and I have a great perspective from there.
Yeah,
you did that, and you saved the game. And then, well, how about the game? How about tell the fans what happened in the eighth inning?
Eighth
inning. Rooster's on first, and Remy hits a line drive to right, and you don't see it.
Well, that was in the ninth, wasn't it?
No, that was in the eighth, because in the ninth it was. You know, we were starting to get to Gossage, and it was pretty much in the eighth inning, I think, is when play
Freddie,
occurred.
I think it was in the ninth, because I think Burleson led off with a base hit, then Remy hits his ball to right field. I don't see it at all. I told Bob Lemon before about the seventh inning. I said if the ball's hit on the line to right field, I can't see anything at all. I said, it's hit or miss. And Remy hits his line shot over second base. And there was one out. And what I did, it was right. I backed up without panicking to give myself a little more chance for the ball to come out of the sun. And lo and behold, it finally did. It came out. I saw it. I caught it on the bounce. And then I made a heck of a throw to third base. Burleson stayed on second. Then Rice flied out to me in right center field. And then you all had the tying runs at first and third, or the winning run at first and the tying run at third with two outs. And Gossage got Yastrzemski to pop up to Nettles.
Yep, that's right.
Base. And up to what? That pop up that Yastrzemski hit, it seemed to me like it never came down. It stayed up forever.
Yeah, he took, you know, in today's parlance, you know, the angle, you know, he was going for the lift and separate angle there, launch angle. And he hit it on the screws, but he hit it straight up. But you
straight up
basically, you kept Burleson from going to third. And so then Rice's fly ball would have tied the game.
No question.
You know, then Yaz doesn't feel like he has to hit a home run, just get space hit. He might hit a double. Who knows? But I mean, you cost us 3 runs. Just playing defense, and we ended up losing that game 5-4.
One thing, you know, I came up to the big leagues late in my career, and I mean, I was 25 years old. I was the oldest rookie of the year in the American League. I stayed around though. I was 42 because I had decent hitting mechanics. But at the same time, when Bill Burden came over to the Yankees in 1975, I think, he impressed on me that I really had to improve my outfield play. And he made me really concentrate on playing defense. And he was totally right. And I credit him because I never worked so hard in my life at the end of a fungo every day in spring training. And Bill Burden just hitting one ball after another. So defense counts when you're playing on good teams. And that particular day, Gossage got a 2 2/3 inning save. Unbelievable. That's unheard of in today's game.
Yeah, you know what? I was just happy to see Guidry come out. So even though Goose throws 100 miles an hour, we're just happy Guidry's out of the game. And to a man, everybody's hitting Goose pretty, you know, we were moving the ball around against
no
him
question.
Pretty good. But you know, like I say, your defense, you know, obviously Bucky Dent's home run is a big deal. And I remember when he hit it, you know, Yaz thought it was going to go off the wall. And I'm backing Yaz up and I'm watching the ball come down and it literally hit the backside of the fence. I mean, it was just a scraper. It couldn't have cleared it by a foot. And I went,
unbelievable.
And Taco, Torres was throwing great that day.
He really was. He had a great sinker and a real nice slider. And you know what? I think from talking to Taco, he told me that he didn't throw any warm-up pitches after the long delay when he fouled on off his shin. And I think it cost him because he threw him a sinker that he wanted blowing away. And the darn thing just stayed in on the inside part of the plate. And Bucky just hit this fly ball. And we thought that it might hit the wall. We really did. We weren't sure. And this thing, when it went up to the into the net, and I saw Yastrzemski drop his head, Boston, which was a real loud place, became very, very silent very, very quickly. And then Reggie hit the home run into center field to give us a little cushion. And then you came back at us at the latter part of the ball game, and we held on. And, you know, what's amazing is that we beat you all 5 straight times in Fenway. I don't think the Yankees have done that too often to a real good Boston club. And we won 5 in a row, 4 in September, and 1 in October. And that was a difference. Although you all came back to New York next about 3 weeks later and beat us 2 out of 3 there in New York also.
Yeah, you know, both of our clubs are good road clubs. You know, we could manufacture runs. We didn't have to have a home field advantage. And sometimes it was advantage to be on the road if the press was on your case. And you guys probably felt that same way. Boy, let's get the heck out of town so we can relax.
Sure. I'm going to tell you a little funny story about we lost it, like you said, in New York to Rick Waits the last day of the season. And you all won, and now we got to go to Fenway to play off in this playoff to play in that playoff game. And we get to Boston about 9 o'clock at night, and I'm thinking to myself, "Boy, I'm going to sleep. I was a little nervous. I'm going to sleep, get a good night's sleep, and get to the ballpark early." I get to bed and I can't sleep, so I said, "You know, I'm going to go over to the watering hole down the street, Daisy Buchanan." Yeah, and have a little Jack Daniels and water and just relax a little bit. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm walking there, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be in bed. I walk into the place and we had about 13 players over there and I really felt good about it.
You know what, Lou, I often felt that in big games, the road team had the ability to relax more by just doing what you were doing, because that's where the team becomes a team, I think. When you all go out having a couple beers or whatever, you're hanging out. But when you're at home, you got your family, you might have kids, you might have relatives in. There's no relaxing, not one little bit. You
can't
do those things. You can't do those things. So the visiting team, they're out. And they're just kicking the feet up, you know, having a couple of brewskis and talking about, you're not worried about it. Then you come to the park and you relax and you play better.
And you play better, yeah. And both the game was very, very, very well played on both sides. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. It was 5-4. And again, the two best teams in baseball, nothing even close to it. We swept Kansas City in 3 games, and then we played the Dodgers and beat them for the second time in a row in six games, and we were never threatened. So it was let me tell you what, that game sticks out in my mind as the most fun-filled game I've ever played in my life. And, you know, they talk about the rivalry. Look, we didn't like the Red Sox, but we respected them. We really did. Thurman and Reg and Carlton had that rivalry going behind the plate. But let me tell you what, we knew that Boston was a great team, and we knew they were going to put runs up on anybody. And that's exactly what happened that day. And Bucky, if Torres just keeps the ball out over the plate a little bit, Bucky's not going to do all that much with the ball. But Sinker stayed down and in, and he hits his fly ball that goes about 315 feet or whatever, and it's a three-run dinger. Unbelievable.
Fred, let me ask you this. After the one-game playoff, how soon after that did you talk with Bucky Dent, and just how painful was that loss?
As far as getting over the loss, I never got over it. There's a couple things that I look back on my career, and yeah, like Lou says, it's an honor to play in one of the greatest games I ever played, really, that 78 playoff game. Game 7 of the 75 World Series, which we lost, and in 82 I lost a playoff game to Milwaukee when we were ahead of them. So those kind of things I never get over. I still see me hitting that ball off Guidry, and I still see Lou running and snow coning the ball in the corner. I mean, I've never gotten over those things. And as far as Bucky is concerned, you know what? He was back in the day when shortstops were paid to play shortstop, and if you hit, it was a bonus. And so, I mean, he got the biggest hit of his career. I remember he was going on to talk shows and doing all these things, and he got all these accolades for winning the game. And, you know, it was the biggest hit of his life. And like Lou says, he hit it in 320 feet. But it's just one of those things, you know, but I never got over it. It's those things haunt me.
Freddie talking about Bucky, you know, he fouled that ball off his shin, and Mickey Rivers was the leadoff hitter, and he tells Bucky, listen, use my bat. He says, I feel lucky with this bat. Use my bat. So he switched bat to hit that home run.
Yeah, well, I heard that story. Now I want to check that bat.
No. Didn't mean it that way. No, not at all. But, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing when things are going to happen, they happen. And you're right. Bucky Dent was just a really consistent a defensive shortstop. He played excellent defense. He had a really good throwing arm, and he was a really good teammate. But that particular year, he didn't hit the ball much for power, and he hit the biggest home run of the year for us. And he's made a nice living on the talking circuit from that time. And rightfully so.
Well, I think we're good on 1978, but a huge rivalry that covers so many years. You mentioned the type A players that existed on both sides. Lou, in 1976, you slid into Carlton Fisk, and that resulted in a bench clearing that lasted for a long time. Tell us what we don't know about that.
Well, I wasn't the fastest guy in the world. I mean, I could run the bases decent, but I wasn't a speedster by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm on third base with one out, and a ball's hit to Dwight Evans in right field. And Dwight Evans has got one of the strongest, most accurate throwing arms. And Dick Houser, our third base coach, was holding me up on the play, and I said, "The hell with this, I'm going out."
That's that type A personality.
Yeah, and I did. And Carl was blocking home plate, so I rammed into him pretty good. And as we fell down, he stuck the ball right in my face, which is fine. I mean, listen, he wasn't trying to hurt me, and I wasn't trying to hurt him. But and all of a sudden, we started throwing punches, and it got out of hand a little bit. And I think Bill Lee got hurt by Nettles body slammed him over there in front of the Yankee dugout. And it hurt Boston, no question. But listen, there was a great rivalry. Listen, the greatest rivalries in baseball are the Yankees and Red Sox. You've got San Francisco and the New York and the L.A. Dodgers, and then you've got the Cardinals and the Cubs. So listen, everybody had, we didn't hate the Red Sox. I don't think the Red Sox hated us. I think we respected each other, and the fans and the newspapers created those type of rivalries more than the players themselves.
Yeah, from my perspective, you know, going into Yankee Stadium in the 70s there, I was always cognizant when I was coming back to the dugout to put my glove over my head because stuff would be coming out of the stands from bottles to grapefruits, darts, batteries, golf balls, you name it. That stuff was flying down on us. So, and Luke can attest to this, there were more fights in the stands in those days than there were on the field. I mean, we used to tussle with the Yanks. There's no question about it. But there were always fights in the stands. If some lunatic Red Sox fan wore some Red Sox paraphernalia in New York, he was asking for trouble, and they got it. I mean, they were always duking it out at their place and our place. So obviously that spills into the field. And I think most of it stemmed from Munson and Fisk. You got these two big type A personality guys. They're both catchers. They're both in the same division. We're just down the street from each other. We play each other like seemed like every other day. And so those guys like to talk. As for me, I'm in center field. I'm away from all the action. You know, I'm closer to the fans than I am to the fisticuffs when they break out. So when that fight started, I'm in center field. Well, by the time I get there's piles everywhere. Well, I'm not going to that big pile at home plate because there's lots of stuff going on there. So I'm in the dance crew over here, and there's a big pile, and I got my arms against Otto Velez, and I'm trying to yank him off the pile because he's doing no good. He's kind of digging where he should be. So I just wrap my arms around him, and I'm pulling him off, and I feel this whap. I get hit in the back of the head.
Oh,
well, I'm not letting go of Otto because he's a big boy. So I still have a hold of him, but there's nobody there. I turn around. There's no one there. And I knew it couldn't have been a big guy because I'd have been laid out if it was somebody big. And it wasn't until I worked at ESPN many years later, and we're doing a Yankees Red Sox game, and it was pointed out to me, I think, by Mr. Cutlow, that they slowed down the tape, and I could see Mickey Rivers just going around and doop, boom. Just
yeah.
A little like little chicken punches.
Yeah,
make it quick. He'd pop somebody and then run around and he'd be gone. And you know, I saw him years later, and it didn't hurt me. I mean, no one wants to get in the head, but it didn't faze me or anything. And I just had to laugh because if you know Mickey and you played with him, you can't hate the guy. I mean,
love him.
Yeah, he just doesn't have that in him. So, you know, I wasn't one of those guys that I hate the Yankees. I respected them, like Lou said. We respected them. We played you guys like 19, 20 times a year. But as far as throwing punches and stuff like that, if I have to be really pissed, to be honest with you, to fight. You know, so if one of their guys had thrown one in my ear, yeah, that might have done something. But plays at second, or you know, I'm in the outfield. That stuff is not. I'm too far away from the action to be directly involved most of the time.
Now everyone has seen footage of these brawls, but was there any payback in the games or years that followed?
No, not from our side. You know, there was nothing. If there was a fight, you know, Bill Lee did get hurt in that because. It looked like it was over and Bill said something and Nettles grabbed him by the arm and threw him down and hurt his shoulder. He was never quite the same after that. But no, you know, even if you took somebody out back, you know, the rules were different back then. I mean, double play balls, you tried to take guys out. And it was up to the shortstop or second baseman to get out of the way because we're taking you out. And nobody really had any retaliatory pitches for guys doing their job. I never remember, I, to be honest with you, I don't remember from either side the pitchers throwing it to hitters. I just don't remember that. And it was all, usually the fights happen by something that on the field, a breakup, a double play or some play at the plate. But I don't remember anybody headhunting. I just don't remember that.
I don't either, Freddie. No, they were all rivalry games, well-played games, and both teams. I know we respected Boston. I really did. And we audited their lineup. I mean, I can basically almost 40 years ago remember their lineup. I mean, it was one hitter after another, left-handed, right-handed. average hitters, power hitters. About the only thing, they didn't steal many bases, but they didn't have to. Our club didn't steal many bases either. What made our club hard to pitch to, I thought, was that our right-hand hitters were more the right center field, left center field, average RBI type guys, and our left-hand hitters didn't hit for as much average, but they hit more for power, and it was more conducive for Yankee Stadium because of the short porch over there. So when we went to Boston, what helped us was the fact that our right-hand hitters could hit the ball for more power because we crowd the plate just a little more in Boston to make sure that we could hit it to the pull field.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, if you guys made adjustments as hitters coming into Fenway Park.
Yeah, we did. I know myself, I know Thurman, we would crowd the plate just a little more and try to force the Boston pitchers to pitch us inside a little more so that we could hit the ball for a little more power. Or in Yankee Stadium, we'd get off the plate a little more because it was so deep out there in left center field. And we wanted to keep that ball on the line, the left center field and right center field. And we had a lefty righty lineup all the way through. Where Boston, I mean, outside of Remy and Burleson can hit a home run from time to time too. Everybody else in that lineup, I mean, could hit the ball for power and hit the ball for average. It was just a great lineup. It really was. And it just amazed me. I still think about it today. How in the hell did we ever come back from 14 and a half games? And Freddie explained it with the injuries and so forth the second half of the year. But it was a heck of a pennant race. And to this day, I remember that year. And I remember that playoff game and the fact that we repeated as world champions.
To add to that, Lou, Boston had a big lead the season. And then the Yankees started making a comeback. There were whispers of 1978 all over again. Freddie, I'm wondering about the allegiance you still have with the Red Sox, watching them now from afar.
Well, for me, you know, this I was signed by the Sox, so you know I have a certain allegiance to them and they to me actually. And yeah, I'm watching all the time, Yankees Red Sox series all the time. And the last season was so unique that, I mean, the Yankees won 100 games and they're 8 games out. That's insane. You won 100 games and you're 8 games behind. You know, what the Red Sox were able to do last year as a team is, I've never seen it. I mean, the Yankees in 78 won 100 and we won 99. But this year, 108 games, that feels like you never lose. I mean, they never lost 4 in a row. They never lost 4 in a row.
Well, there's a lot more parity. There was a lot more parity in baseball in the 70s than there is now.
This year, I agree with you.
There were a lot of bad teams in baseball. I mean, just a whole slew of bad teams. And the Yankees and the Red Sox stood out. And what a job your manager, Cora, did with that team. He used the pitching exceptionally well. He used the lineup exceptionally well. And I thought Mookie Wilson was the MVP of the year, and I thought he was the best player in baseball, actually, and that's exactly what happened. So, but what a year the Red Sox had. They really did. And now the Yankees are beefing up. I was just talking to Hal Steinbrenner the other day here in Tampa, and he says, boy, we got to get some pitching to beat Boston this year. So it hasn't changed.
Well, you know what? You make a good point in that there's was greater parity when we played. I think in 78 there were 5 teams in the division that were over 500. In fact, you guys were so far down that we were, you know, the Orioles and Milwaukee, they were like only 5 games behind us. So
yes,
we were, you never looked 2 or 3 teams behind you. We always felt the pressure of those guys in the second half because they were right knocking on the door 5-6 games out. That's not very many games. It wasn't until you guys went past them to get into second place is when we started
to
think about you
a little bit. Yeah, you know, right. Best, yes.
And in today's game, like you said, there are so many bad teams, and you know, the really good teams, they slaughter these teams. So you can have these unbelievable. Well, he had 3 teams with over 100 wins, and I don't remember that happening ever.
No, it doesn't happen. Exactly right. Yeah, it's almost when in today's game. Probably when the season starts, there might be 6 or 8 teams that can that you can look at legitimately and say they have a chance to go to the World Series. When we played, there were more like 12 or 15 that could do that.
Easily. Catch a break, you know, guys get hot. Key starter go down for the Yankees or the Red Sox, and all of a sudden Detroit, Milwaukee, Baltimore, they're in business.
No question.
Maybe the best way to end this great discussion, guys, and we really appreciate it. It's just absolutely wonderful. What's the best memory? What's the one that you take away with you for a lifetime regarding this rivalry in that season?
To me, it was, truthfully, my favorite park to ever play in was Fenway Park. It really was. It was a fun place to play in. The fans were right on top of you. It was a good offensive ballpark. I mean, if you could hit there, if you were a decent hitter and you knew what was going on at home plate, you could have a decent day offensively. And that's what I remember the most, truthfully, the playing in Fenway Park. I love playing in Fenway Park. I love staying downtown and I love the city of Boston. In fact, when I retired in 84, they announced my retirement there in Fenway, and the fans gave me a standing ovation, and I had tears in my eyes. I was so moved. And Boston's always been a great sports town, the way they supported the Red Sox and the rest of the teams there. And it's a great town, what can I say? And it was fun for me to go there and play against the Red Sox. And Fenway Park was my favorite park to play in.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Fenway's my favorite park to play in as well. I was kind of built for it. But my favorite enemy ballpark was Yankee Stadium. I absolutely enjoyed being a Red Sox player, coming in there with 55,000 people hating you. It was just electric. I just loved it. I mean, yeah, all the boos, blah, blah, blah. I just loved that stage. And when I got a little bit older, I got a little bit bigger, a little stronger. And Lou might be even impressed by this one. I hit a home run off Rudy May to left center.
A long poke.
That's the furthest ball I ever hit the other way. It's 9 miles out there. But I just enjoyed every game there. It was so intense. You felt alive. And even after the game, I mean, you don't go to bed till like 3 a.m. The city's just waking up. But, you know, we used to start games. ABC Game of the Week started at 8:40 start. So by the time you get back to the hotel, it's 1. You go out and have a couple hot toddies.
Brewskies, yeah.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden 2-3 a.m, and the town's still jumping. It was just a great place to play. I loved every second of it going there. And then obviously the rivalry, because they were always good and we were always good. And so in the stage was so cool. Every once in a while I make a defensive play and you just 55,000 people go silent.
Oh yeah,
coolest thing. It's the coolest thing when it just gets real quiet after you made a play to take away a run or a hit from a Yankee player. That was the best.
Yes. You know, I was blessed that I was able to wear a Yankee uniform. I got traded there from Kansas City in 1973, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. And for an owner like Mr. Steinbrenner that loved winning and spent the money to put a good product on the field, it was a blessing for me. And truthfully, those are the moments that I cherish the most. Now, I managed for 23 years in the big leagues, but I'll tell you what, the thrill of putting on a Yankee uniform and stepping out the Yankee Stadium, unsurpassed in my career.
Well, I'll tell you something you might not know. When I was in high school, I was drafted by the Yankees. I was supposed to be the next Bobby Mercer. And so they scouted me from the time I was 15 years old. I even played on a team called the Pasadena Yankees, and I wore Moose Scowen's old uniform. It had Scowen stitched into it. So I was a Yankee guy from the time I was 15 till 18, and I was drafted by him. And then I went to SC to play football and baseball instead. But, yeah, I could have been a Yankee very easily.
Well, Freddie, you know, the amazing thing grew up here in Tampa, Florida, and my hero growing up was Ted Williams. So I was always a Red Sox fan when I was a youngster growing up here in Tampa because of Ted. And I never was in the Red Sox organization, but I got traded to the Yankees, and boy, what a blessing that was. And when you play in a small market like Kansas City, and you mentioned it before, some guys can adjust to the bigger stage, and some guys just don't quite make it. And I was a little nervous the first time I put on that uniform in spring training. And when we got to New York and the thrill of walking in the Yankee Stadium where so many great players had played and they had won so many world championships, it was just a total blessing, and it's the best thing that happened to me in my whole playing career.
Yeah, I felt the ghost of the past. That's why I like the old stadiums, and I felt privileged to have played in our era because I'm in Yankee Stadium and Mickey Mantle standing where I was standing, yes. Joe D, all the greats. I'm just like, this is so cool. I'm standing in the same spot. So that was
why were all these older stadiums the ones that were most fun to play? And I enjoyed playing in Tiger Stadium also as a hitter.
Yeah, well, that's that was a wonderful place to hit if you get the ball in the air. That's for sure.
Question.
But every ballpark that we played in had just some kind of unique quality to it. Unlike today's stadiums, in fact, as you know, Lou, that most of the baseball fields that we played on were stuck in football stadiums, and so
exactly.
A football field ran right through most of our field, and I'd say at least half of the stadiums that we played in were multi-purpose, and they're basically for football, and they threw baseball in. And now today's players are so fortunate where they just play baseball, and the fields are like pool tables. They're immaculate.
Yeah, they're perfectly manicured, no question. Yeah,
how about how bad the outfield it was in New York? I mean, you ran from second base, you went downhill into the center, and you went back up the hill, and then if you went right field, went back downhill again.
no question.
Oh, great fun, Lou. Great fun.
It was, Freddie. And, I feel fortunate we won in 78 and repeated as world champions. But truthfully, that the team you guys had, I'm positive that if we hadn't won that ball game, you all would have been the world champions that year.
Yeah, I agree with you.
This ends another chapter of the Sports Rivals. You can find the show at Believe.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the show. To learn more about this one and other episodes, please log on to SportsRivals.com as you can join the conversation with questions and suggestions for future shows. Also, follow on Instagram at The Sports Rivals, Twitter at Rivals_podcast. And Facebook by searching for the Sports Rivals podcast. Thank you, and always remember, the rivalries do make the games.